So we left off, I think, in the middle of the discussion of Harama, the idea that the Rishonim, some of the Rishonim, the different Gersos, but some of the Rishonim had this comment, okay, you can give, transfer your chametz to a non-Jew for the duration of Pesach, but no Haramas. And the question is, well, what do you mean no Haramas? That sounds like it's a Harama itself, in and of itself. So what additional issue is there that shouldn't be a harama? So we mentioned that there are a number of interpretations, and I think we said up front that one is going to be bad for us, one maybe not so bad, and one somewhere in the middle. So the one that's bad for us, we mentioned yesterday, the view of the Ritva and a few other Rishonim that say that you can't do this regularly. This is a thing that happens b'mikra. You happen to find yourself in a situation that you're on a boat. For those of you just joining us, that was the context in the Tosefta, that somebody's on a boat, and Pesach dawns upon him while he's there. He all of a sudden realizes that it's going to be Pesach any minute, or it's going to be his manas or chametz any minute, because we have to do this several hours before Pesach. So then what can he do with the chametz that he has? And apparently he can't afford to just chuck it over the side of the boat. So he can transfer it to a non-Jewish co-passenger. So the question was, so is that enough to validate the practices that we have today? Does that cover what we do today? And there are differences. So a part of addressing those differences was the question of, what about the statement that some of the Rishonim have? Yeah, you could do that. And the Shulchan Aruch quotes this, by the way. This is certainly a din that's out there. But, Lubavad Shlo Yarev. So what does that mean, Lo Yarev?
That's their Gersa.
Seems like they have the Gersa like that. Yeah, that's what it sounds like from the Rishonim that have that. And the others don't. I mean, some of the bigger Rishonim don't have that text. But what would it mean? So either it means don't do it every year, that's bad for us. Or it means don't do it as Matana Manas Lahasir. So that's better for us because we don't do it with the Matana Manas Lahasir. And we discussed yesterday a little bit how it is done. And we emphasized a very, very crucial point. It is not done under any conditions or any contingencies. It's an absolute transfer. No questions asked, no revocation. It's a complete and full and unqualified transfer of the chametz. And after Pesach, it gets transferred back in a separate transaction, generally because that's the option given other than the purchaser just paying for the chametz, which he's often not prepared to do. So if you say that it can't be a matana manas lahachzir, so then we're better off because we don't do it with Matana Manas Lahachzir. We discussed a little bit why should that bother us. Matana Manas Lahachzir actually might work better here than other places where we know that it does work. And to discuss some theories as to why that is, very possibly it's not actually a problem in the fundamental sense. It probably would work, but you're not supposed to do it either because of chumrat the chametz, or because it makes it look like too much of a harama to be so overt. All right, we're definitely getting it back, and in fact, I'm only giving it to you on that condition. It passes our comfort level somehow for one reason or another. I should mention, by the way, that the Ritva, if you look at the Ritva, he writes that when he says we shouldn't do it every year, that in his mind, if you did it every year, that shifts the nature of what's going on. That essentially turns it into a pikadon. And if it's a pikadon, then that's a problem. That if you're having the non-Jew just watch it for you, then that's something which has a whole different category to it that you're going to be liable for. So he writes that it's no good even after the fact if you do it every year because of that. So that's an interesting assessment. And again, that's something that causes us some difficulties. An in-between position, or we'll have to figure out what the position is that some say that it has to actually be picked up and taken by the purchaser. And that's what we mean, that you have to give it to them in a serious way. So is that a problem for us? What would you say? Does that work with our contemporary Mechiras Chametz?
I don't have to physically pick up.
Yeah. seems pretty bad for us, right? That we tend to have the chametz still in our houses. So the later svarim, actually, even including the Mishnah Berurah and others, are not so worried about this because they have different ways of addressing it. Either they understand that it's not actually about the chametz not being in your house, but it's about the nature of the kinyan, that the point of the statement is that there has to be a real kinyan, and therefore the reference was to a kinyan mashicha. But if there are other effective kinyanim happening, then maybe that's enough. And it's also pointed out, and this is also something which Mishnah Berurah, I believe, makes reference to, is that part of the way we do things is that we transfer over the chametz together with the location. We also lease out where the chametz is. So therefore, that, even though it seems like it's a big technicality, but maybe it's an effective enough technicality, that the chametz actually is in the possession and in the location of the purchaser. But here is where you also find discussion. The Bach over here and others make reference to something which very much usually makes it into our contemporary chametz forms. And that is the issue of the keys. That, I'm sure if you, maybe some of you have never experienced mechiras chametz, if you've always done things for your parents, but if you've experienced mechiras chametz, so you know that they'll generally ask you, are you going to be home over Pesach? And if you're not going to be home, how do we reach you? Where are your keys? So this is something which was discussed already in the earlier svarim, that it's necessary to provide at least access to the chametz. So it could be that this is what the Rishonim are addressing here. They're saying that it's a problem if you sell the chametz and you don't make it accessible at all. So our practice nowadays, and there are various nuances in how this is done, and it's also worth being aware that maybe the fact that it's discussed by these Rishonim shows that it's a bigger deal than we might appreciate, right? Because when the rabbi asks you for your keys or your phone number, so on one level, that's valuable because it makes it more serious. And anything that makes the kinyan more serious is valuable. But it may be even more meikar hadin, that for this sale to count, he really has to have access to it. And then we could argue about what's considered access, what's considered reasonable access. So we usually ask if the person is home over Pesach, so then that could be enough because the purchaser could show up at any time, knock on the door and say, hi, I'm here for my chametz. Or if he's not going to be home, then we have to develop something else, that either he has to leave his keys with someone or leave his phone number, that it's going to be accessible. Right? This is something that we generally do address nowadays when we sell chametz, because it's important that the chametz be accessible. Now, it doesn't mean it has to be accessible 24 hours a day. It doesn't mean that the person, let's say, if he's going to be home, so he can still leave the house and he can still not answer the door at 2 o'clock in the morning. It doesn't mean it has to be accessible constantly, but that it should be accessible reasonably. That's an important part of the sale, and maybe that's what is addressed here when we say that it's got to be a Matana Gemura or it can't be a Harama. So that is one of the possible candidates for what we're talking about. So basically three possibilities: one that's bad for us, don't do it every year; one that we're okay with, don't do it as a Matana Nasa Hachzir; and one that's somewhere in the middle, but the purchaser has to actually take it. So that sounds a little problematic for us, but we probably have it covered. We probably actually do address that, even though it seems a little bit different than what we do. Okay, so far so good? All right, now here, let's discuss a major issue within this whole concept. So, we mentioned yesterday that there's so many interesting things in this topic. We spend a zaman talking about the Mechiras Chametz. It's just an endlessly interesting topic. There is I'm just thinking how to prioritize which points to try to make sure to squeeze in. So, is it true that you're dealing with deraisas when you talk about Mechiras Chametz? Right? That was one of the premises we mentioned yesterday. We said maybe that's one of the few things that makes Hetta Mechira a little bit more solid than Mechiras Chametz, the fact that Hetta Mechira is dealing with Rabbanans and Mechiras Chametz is dealing with Daraisas. So is that true? That we're dealing with deraisas when it comes to mechiras chametz? Or
you might only be allowed to sell chametz that's not chametz deraisa.
Okay, so that's one approach, right? There are those who, Adi Yomazeh, have such a attitude that they don't sell chametz deraisa, they don't sell full-blown chametz, for that reason, that they don't want to use mechiras chametz for a deraisa, which we alluded to yesterday, you could see that in two ways. One, in a kind of inexact way, to say that, well, it just feels wishy-washy and we're more serious about the rices than the Rabbanan, so we don't want to do this. Or, in a more precise way, to say that it is somewhat of a harama, and that haramas are more acceptable to Rabbanan than they are to Raisa, and we explained yesterday why. It's not just a question of degree, but maybe it goes to the nature of how rabbinic law is conceived. So, there are those who only sell certain types of products. They're not going to sell bread and bagels. They're not going to sell absolute chametz. That they will get rid of. And they only sell things that are less absolutely chametz on a level minator. So you certainly have that practice, b'zman hazeh. Definitely there are people who do that. But let's say you're selling bread. Let's say you're selling something that is unquestionably deraisa. Is there any way to still say that the situation somehow is not deraisa? Yes, sir. Okay, so that's the position of the Bechor Ashor, which many invoke as well. And this shifts things over, right? So many will say, no, I don't have to be so firm as to only sell chametz d'rabbanan. I can sell chametz d'raisa, and I'm still only involving myself with d'rabbanas. Why? Because there is bittul. This is based on the Gemara in the beginning of Pesachim, the first paragraph of Pesachim, where the Gemara talks about the Dikas Chametz. And there, the discussion comes up, well, why do we do B'dikas Chametz? What are we trying to address? Is B'dikas Chametz the requirement in HaTorah or Midrabanan? The Gemara discusses, well, maybe it's Daraisa, because Chametz is not allowed to own in HaTorah, so then it sounds like B'dikas Chametz is connected to that. So then, in that context, the Gemara says, no, in HaTorah, Midaraisa, Bittul ba'alma sagile. That min haTorah, bittul is effective to address that. So when you essentially divest yourself of the chametz, so then that addresses the issur d'oraisa, and all that's left apparently is the rabbanus. So the assumption here is the Bechor Ashor's commentary on the Chulin says this, that it's not a d'oraisa because of bittul. So,
how much of the concept of bittles meant for things that we plan on having or we actually know about versus what we don't know about?
That's a huge question. So this, as some point out, not as many as you think, but some object, that that's a huge problem. It's a huge hole in this theory, it would seem. Right? Because, wait a minute, it's bittle? That's not what the Gemara was talking about. And the Gemara says that you think you don't have any chametz. So then you do bittul. So okay, so we don't have to worry that there's chametz under the couch because it's all together bittul. But that helps us from mechiras chametz? I mean, the chametz that you're doing business with, that you're selling, and that you think you're going to get back later, you mevatel that too? That would seem to undermine both directions. Hard to believe that's called bittul, and if it is bittul, hard to believe that's called a sale. And so presumably, it's two separate categories. The chametz that you sell is not bittul, and the chametz that's left under your couch, that's bittul. So this is a big objection to the view of the Bechor Ashor, and many agree with him and many don't because of this kind of objection. Kadosh Glover, Kedarka B'Kodesh, has a chuv about this, where he, Kedarka B'Kodesh, has a creative approach. And he says, he thinks that the nature of things is that the sale and the bittul take place at the exact moment, and that's how it works. And he says that you have to say that they both take place at the same time because of the Ran. Because the Ran says as follows, the Ran himself and Rice, I don't think I gave this Ran to look at, but it's a good Ran to be aware of. But the Ran says, why does bittul work at all? Right? Normally, if you want to divest yourself of something, so we have a process for that. What's that called? Hefker, right? To be mafker something. So hefker is a more formal process than bittul is. So how do you get away with just bittul delay? That's enough. So the Ran says, no, why does it work? Because chametz is not yours anyway. And this opens up all kinds of interesting discussions. Again, I wish we had 100 hours to talk about these things. But whatever it is. That when it comes to chametz, the Gemara says in Pesachim that shlosh dvar meina b'rishus shel adam v'asav mekasuv ilim b'rishus. So there are some things that are not yours, but the Torah treats them as if they are yours. Two things, and so the Gemara says a bor b'rishus haravim, that if you make a bor out in Amsterdam Avenue, so you're a chayiv for that, even though it's not yours. But normally in Mizikin, you're a chayiv for things that belong to you that cause damage. If you make a hole in the public street, so why should you be chayiv? It's not your street. So you're chayiv because you made the hole. But that's a chiddush. So that's an example of something which is not yours, and we treat it as yours. And chametz on Pesach. Right, chametz, we should say that the whole Isser, Ba'yiro, Ba'yimotzeh, doesn't make sense, because chametz doesn't have any status. There's no ownership. Now, parenthetically, this is a huge, huge topic, so I'll just try to introduce it very quickly and parenthetically. There's a question in general in halacha: if something is asr b'harna, if something you're not allowed to benefit from, does that amount to essentially zero value? If you can't benefit, then it has no value. And if it has no value, then maybe there's no such thing as ownership. And how can you own something that has no value? That's a big discussion in Achronim if that's true or not. It's a huge subject of itself. Has a lot of ramifications. But maybe we should say that something that doesn't have value can't be owned, and if it can't be owned, it can't be sold. It's a different discussion. It can't be sold or bought. So the question comes up. So what does the Isser Bal Yiro Bal Yimotzeh mean? How can you own chametz if you can't own chametz? And if how can it be an Isser to own chametz if it's not possible to own chametz? So it could be that in a chanami, that this is a kind of unusual type of Isser. It's a little bit like intermarriage. Right, we have an isser of intermarriage, but kiddushin, this is our topic for this year, kiddushin isn't tofix with a non-Jew, so it's impossible to intermarry. So what's the isser about? Right, so we understand that the isser is not to actually halachically get married, but to act as if you are married is the isser, even though the halacha doesn't recognize it as a marriage. So it could be that there's some kind of similar dynamic here, that chametz, you can't actually own the full halachic sense. But nonetheless, the Isser is about relating to it as an owner, even if we can't really actually own it. So maybe that's what the Gemara means when it says this is something she'eino b'rishuso, v'asah makasuv yilhei b'rishuso, that you don't actually own chametz on Pesach, no matter how much you think you do, and the Torah treats you as if you do, even though technically the parts don't add up. Technically, you can't own it. So the Ran says that the reason bittul works is basically because of that. Because normally, if you had to be mafkir or something that you actually own, we would need a more formal process. But you don't really own chametz on Pesach. So therefore, bittul is effective to disconnect you from this fake connection in the first place. Right? The connection you have to chametz on Pesach is already not a full connection because of the lack of possibility of ownership. So therefore, bittul is enough to say, listen, no, I don't want that. I'm not a part of this. Okay? So far, so good? So that's what the Kadjar Glover says. Hold on a second. Wait a minute. That's his question on the Ran. He says, bittul works because you don't actually own the chametz? What do you mean? That would be true on Pesach. But before Pesach, why don't you own the chametz? Why is bittul effective before Pesach, or before this Man HaEsser, more specifically? You do own the chametz, fully. So that's his raya. Says the Kadosh Glover, you see that the bittul doesn't actually kick in until this Man HaEsser. So somehow, he says, therefore, you can have them both only take effect when they need to, and that's how the Bechor Shor is building his case, that bittul and Mechira are coexisting in the same space. But, with all due respect, it's still a difficult position to take. So many assume that you can't rely on the possibility that Bittul is here. And if you're selling bread, then you're selling it deraisas. And that means one of two things. That either you're not going to do that, and you're going to say, I don't want to be involved with selling deraisas. Or you're going to have to man up and say, I'm ready to accept the consequences. And say, yes, I'm selling chametz and I believe in it. And even though it's deraisas, I think it still works. Okay? So that's a whole discussion. So there are many who are machmir not to sell chametz for that reason. And there are others who, nonetheless, will say, and that's an absolute chametz. And others will say, no, that this can be effective for absolute chametz too. So basically, it breaks down into three different positions. That mechiras chametz only works for drabanans, and therefore only sell chametz drabanan. Or it only works for drabanans, but it's okay, because all chametz is drabanan together with bittul. Or, no, it works for the raisas too, and even though bittul doesn't help us, it doesn't matter, because it's effective on a level in the hatar. So here, I think what we'll do is, again, I want to start a new topic tomorrow, but there's one major vort that I want to say about this, and I want to rush that. So the vort will say, at least that much we'll say at the beginning tomorrow. I'll say a few more details, as many as I can squeeze in the next few minutes, and the major nakuda that we'll say for the beginning of tomorrow, and then hopefully go into Sugi of Talmud Torah. So just to say a few more issues here. So even though it's deraisa, but after the fact, it's drabanan. So if you sell chametz, you want to affect two things. Right? So one thing is you want to not be in violation of Ba'yirel, Ba'yimotzei, over the course of Pesach. And that is possibly Nisr Daraisa, or the definite Nisr Daraisa, but it's possibly relevant here. And after Pesach, so there's the issue of chametz of Lava Pesach. Now that is a machlokes the Bavli and Yerushalmi, but we assume that chametz avol of a Pesach is drabanan. So the isser of eating chametz afterwards that was owned during Pesach is a drabanan. So if that's the shaila that we're talking about, if you're coming after the fact and you're asking, what's the story? I have some suffix here about the ownership of chametz. And you're asking the question after Pesach, you're not asking the question before Pesach, then it's a different landscape. Right? If you're asking me before Pesach, so then we have to confront the possibility that there's an Issur Daraisa that will be relevant over the next few days. If you're asking after Pesach, so then the question is about the Issur Darabanan of Chametz Sha'ogel of Pesach, so then that's possibly a different story. So for example, there's a discussion in at least one sefer. Let's say Rahman al-San, certainly a conceivable possibility. Let's say somebody is in a coma. Somebody is in a bad medical situation, but there's a hope that he will recover. But right now, it's Pesach time, and he's in a coma. So can we do anything for his chametz? So it's a whole question. This is a whole complex issue in itself. Can you decide to make the decision to sell chametz for someone else? Let's say you have non-religious friends. So it's a problem overall to sell chametz on somebody else's behalf, because normally we have a rule of zachim la'adam shlo b'fanav, that you can give somebody something when they're not involved in the process, but that's zachim la'adam. You can give something to someone. To take away, to sell something on somebody's behalf without their permission, that would be called, theoretically, if it existed, zachim me'adam, taking from a person. And it's very questionable, it's a whole discussion, very questionable if that works. So to sell without somebody's consent, certainly if a person is around and eating chametz al Pesach, it's a very shaky case to be made that you're actually selling it on their behalf. But what if they are not capable of being aware? What if they're in a coma? So then, okay, at least there's a bigger case to be made that if they were awake, they would agree, and maybe that helps. Maybe we could say that Zachin Me'adam could work if it's a chus gomer. Here it's a no-brainer. If a person really is religious, So then the chametz is going to become completely useless if they don't sell the chametz. So it's a very strong case to be made that there's a big umdana here that the person would want their chametz to be sold and wouldn't want to be stuck with worthless chametz afterwards. So you can make a strong case. You have to still see if it's strong enough, but it's an easier case to be made if a person is simply incapable of selling their chametz than it is of somebody who is awake and using chametz. Yes, sir.
Can we say that the fact that he's a holy sheish post kind of plays into the fact that he's not really a tithe anyways?
Okay, so the question is, so that gets to the next step. So there are some who discuss this question. They say, well, Zachin only works on a level midrabanan. So how does that impact your thing? So you could say, well, look, there are two shailas, right? One shaila is the yisra b'ayira b'ayimatsa. So there you can say, okay, we're not so worried about that because he's pater for mitzvahs right now anyway. He's not able to do anything, so he's an onus. So if the mitzvah is that you can't help him get rid of his chametz, so he's not responsible for the situation anyway. But the question is, so what will happen after Pesach? So God willing, you should have before Shleima, but we have before Shleima on Chol HaMoed, and then it's not going to be able to sell the chametz then. So what happens then? So if the question is, what about chametz Shavuot of a Pesach? So then that's already the Rabbanim. So then you can maybe say that the Zechiyah was good enough at least to address that. So this comes up also, and I was asked a shayla about this over Shabbos from a different angle, it's a new level. Question of, what about the Rabbi's nightmare? So the Rabbi's nightmare is that he spends hours getting all the shtaros from all the balabatim who are entrusting him with huge values of chametz, and then he loses the shtaros. And no matter how much he wishes upon the shtar, it's not there anymore. So, what happens then? So, that happens to not be as nightmarish as it sounds. Because then, Rav Asher Weiss has an essay about this, in his Haggadah, that even though ideally we want to have as much information as possible when we sell the chametz, but presumably, even if you don't have information, there is such a concept as grab bag kinyanim in halacha. That you can say to somebody, listen, I'm selling you something, I don't know what's in it or what it's worth or what it's about, but you agree to buy it anyway. And if for some reason he agrees to buy it anyway, so then presumably it's his. We don't want to do that l'chachila, we want to try to make it as genuine and as rational as possible. But if it comes down to that, then it's probably possible. So that's an eitzah. And I always look with chumrah just throw in. I try not to lose the shtaros, but that when I sell a chametz, to say that I'm here representing all these people who came to me and wanted to sell the chametz to you, and here are their contracts. And if there's a contract that's not here that got lost along the way, I'm also still representing that person, and I say that out loud to the purchaser, and he says, I agree to buy that too. And you know, presumably it is effective, at least with the Ebbets. So hopefully I don't have any missing stars, but it should be effective. But what if the kinyan of something goes wrong? Right? So as we've discussed, one of the big changes that happened historically is that in the time of the Tosefta, what's described then, and one of the earlier models and where there's been a big shift, is that normally people would sell their own chametz. And nowadays, so most individuals don't sell their own chametz, they go to the rabbi. So that's been a historical shift, and it's a part of the controversy. It is also, I wish we had more time for this, but there's a whole discussion, what exactly happens when you go to the rabbi. So some understand it, and definitely the way people talk about it, they think this is sometimes what's happening, is that they think they're selling their chametz to the rabbi, and the rabbi is then selling it to a non-Jew. So while there is some discussion of that, that is probably a dangerous model. Because what if something goes wrong? It happens to be much easier to make a kinyan between Jews than it is to make a kinyan between a Jew and a non-Jew. So it's very shaykh that the balabas will succeed in selling the chametz to the rabbi, and the rabbi may not succeed in selling the chametz to the non-Jew. So all we've accomplished here is still Chametz Shavuot Pesach, and all we've accomplished is that we've transferred the Averus over to the rabbi. So that's a very Christian way of seeing things. It's not really going to help any Pesach issues. So that's not so ideal. So what happens usually the way we understand it nowadays is that the rabbi is appointed as a shliach. At no point does he own the chametz. He is a emissary to sell the chametz of his congregants to the purchaser, and he's given all the information and the authority to do so, but he never takes ownership personally. So when there's a lifting up of the handkerchief, again, if you've done this personally, so you see the rabbi usually asks you to lift up a handkerchief or something like that, that's not because you're selling it to him then. That kinyan, so to speak, is about the fact that you are appointing him a shliach. So they make a kinyan. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Mechira that when you make a shliach, you don't really have to do anything. You don't have to make any kind of a kinyan, but we want it to be taken seriously, so we have a practice of doing some type of a behavior like that, of lifting up a handkerchief or something in order to make it into a serious kind of thing, but essentially you're just appointing a shliach at that stage. So then the rabbi, with his shlichus, with his power vested in him, so he sells the chametz. So what if he messes up? What if there's a problem? What if the babas tries to do it himself and he messes up? So what about afterwards? Chametz Shavu Pesach. So is that a problem? So maybe not, because the Tshuva L'Chasam Sofer, the Masas Ben Yamin, that maybe you could say, a little bit like the Ran, that at least it counts as bittul. That if you tried to sell your chametz and you weren't successful, so maybe, okay, it didn't actually transfer, but maybe that should at least have a status like bittul, because essentially it's like somebody who tried to throw the garbage out the window and he didn't realize the window was closed, so it bounced back into his house, but he thought he threw it out the window, so he basically disassociated with this item, didn't realize that it bounced back into his property. So maybe that's what happened here, so at least it should be an active bittul, and therefore it should be mutter achra pesach. For that reason,
so.
Right. The act of the sale, the fact that somebody thought he was selling his chametz, even though it didn't really happen, but if somebody thought he was selling his chametz, maybe that should be a din of bittul. So that, you know, if it comes up, halacha maisa, we should talk about it. But that's a svara that theoretically exists. Somebody asked me on Shabbos. The rabbi actually asked me on Shabbos. This was taking it to a new level. He said, "What if the rabbi forgets to sell the chametz?" So then he might have to look for a new job. But let's say it's one of the more nerve-wracking experiences that year. But let's say the rabbi forgets to sell the chametz. He oversleeps Pesach morning. All right, so let's say he has millions of dollars worth of chametz from his baal batim and he forgets to do it. So the question that was asked to me is, can you say he doesn't have to tell anyone because kavod habrios is dof dinim derabanan? And so since it's going to be humiliating for him to tell anyone this, so should he perhaps be off the hook? So the one who asked me saying that he was saying it's Rabbanan, because he was assuming like the Bechor Shor, he was saying that since it's Bittul anyway, so it's all Rabbanan, so maybe we say Kavod HaBrios by the Rabbanan. Maybe. But I told him it's a little more relevant that, because I don't know if it's really a Rabbanan like the Bechor Shor, I think that's a little shaky, but maybe the idea that this sale counts as an act of bittul, that when they thought they were selling it, and the rabbi didn't do anything, so when they went to the rabbi, they thought they were doing their job, they thought they were getting rid of it, so maybe there's a tzad l'hafil afterwards, that should be okay. Alright, there's so much more to talk about, but we have to get back to our regular limud. So I got a thing I'll say tomorrow, I'll give you my makomos for kiddushin, and we'll plan on doing that, going back to our daf. For just the first few minutes, maybe I'll mention one more shaila quickly, and Vort, I want to say about this, and then proceed from there. All right, we wish everyone a wonderful day.